Yo, welcome to another edition of the Ramble Ramble Podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Ford. Follow me on Twitter at CorbinNBA. This is a Sports Ethos presentation. So chat Sports Ethos on Twitter at Sports Ethos Online, sportsethos.com. If you don't know how to spell it, I'll help you out here. S-P-O-R-T-S-E-T-H-O-S. So there you go for those who didn't know. Listen, we're back. It's been a little bit of a hiatus. Balls were dropped because, you know, other projects existed and your boy's been all over. And then got hit with the flu, so that didn't help either. But we are back on hopefully a regular basis for the remainder of the season. Knock on all the woods, right? But we'll see. But for this episode, I'm happy to bring on a good friend, guy who's been on the show before. He's going to be on the show again. He's active on all NBA stuff and all basketball stuff really on Twitter. So make sure to check him out there at Jackson Lloyd NBA. I buried the lead. His name is Jackson Lloyd. Jackson, how you doing, my friend?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, always, man. Always. Happy to have you on. Talk some NBA topics. A lot of stuff has accrued since the last episode I did, which I'm posting. Well, actually, okay, that's not true. As we're recording this, I'm posting the most recent episode I did, which is actually a series I just started. Everyone's doing it now this time of year, but positional rankings. So I did an episode with Nick Andre. That was really cool. That'll be out there soon. But that's like an evergreen type of episode, at least for the remainder of this season. The last episode I've done on actual current NBA events was almost roughly a month ago at this point, which I was like, really? What? So that's been a little bit of a shocker. But now there's been a stuff that's accrued. Some stuff's gone by the wayside just because it's no longer timely. Other stuff I think is still, you know, sort of current. So I kind of want to talk to you, though, about one of the more recent things to start off the show that have popped up here over the last couple of days. And that is concerning Michael Porter's brother, Jontay Porter, who has been he plays for the Toronto Raptors, if you didn't know, on a two-way contract. He's a forward for them. But he was pulled last week from the lineup ahead of Monday's game against the Brooklyn Nets. The league released a statement saying they were looking into several situations in which they were betting irregularities related to Porter's prop bets. So per NBA rules, of course, no NBA employees are permitted to place bets related to NBA games. But it's not the NBA from promoting it because you have all these different commercials and all these different things. And there's going to be apparently betting during league pass next season. So my question, Jackson, as far as how do you take stock of this whole situation with Jontay Porter? You know, he was shooting threes and upset he made them. Do you read into that? Do you not? What is your thoughts on that? And then the second question I have is, do you think that we are pretty much at a point where the NBA and gambling is kind of out of hand?
Well, first of all, I think he should get the benefit of the doubt until he's proven of any potential wrongdoing, just because, I mean, crazier things have happened than people being falsely accused of stuff. But operating under the assumption that, not that he's guilty, but that the NBA has an uncomfortable kind of situation / dare I say, problem here. Me personally, I never had a problem with sports betting, sports gambling, fantasy sports, all that stuff. I play fantasy football. I've played, you know, underdog stuff for NBA games before, but recently I just kind of got a poor sense around it. I don't like how it's being marketed. I think that it's almost being shoved down our throats in the sense that if you go on NBA.com, it's going to show you the point spread of every game. You can see odds on ESPN. There's a new ESPN bet app. And I want to preface this. I don't have an issue with sports gambling as a whole. I think there's a lot of people who do gambling-centric content that are informative. Even if you don't gamble, it can be informative. My issue is that I don't want to say exploitive because everyone that plays is an adult, but I do think some of the games kind of lean into like quick thrills, like not gaming, but game adjacent aspects kind of marketed in a way that I think appeals to younger people, kids, et cetera, because it's not difficult to, if you're in a legalized state or you can play, you know, Prize Picks, underdog fantasy, whatever. It's not difficult to work around any age restriction and stuff like that. So I think with the NBA, the issue they have is eventually there's going to be a situation or a bigger situation than a Jontay Porter potentially betting his own unders. What happens if it's a referee situation or team personnel situation or multiple players, multiple employees, whatever it may be, you know, being involved in something? How would the league handle that? Is there stuff in the CBA that's kind of cut and dry, you know, indefinite suspension, season-long suspension, lifetime suspension, and then how would it go legally? Would someone be legally liable if they were, you know, giving up information that, I don't, my terminology with legalities and gambling isn't great, so I don't want to misspeak, but hopefully you guys kind of get the point. And I don't know. I think that what's blurry with gambling is it went from kind of a niche thing where people who wanted access to that could find it, could benefit, either have fun or make themselves some money too. Now it's everybody's playing player props. And given that all these companies are in business, most people are not making money.
Yeah, I agree. I think I'm weirder about it. Like, I don't mind it in the sense of like, do your thing. Like, I think it's been, gambling's been around, fantasy basketball. Like, I suck at fantasy, like, just in general. So maybe I have some bias there. But no, I feel like it is what it is. Like, it's just a thing. I do think it's gotten a little out of hand in terms of how much everything is tied to that. Like, and I get it. It's bigger. The NBA can partners with it. But I don't, I feel like I'm being hammered over the face with it as someone who doesn't really do it like that. That's not my jam. Like, everyone, you know, different. Now I'm messing in my own allegories or examples, but like different strokes for different folks, that sort of thing. Sure. Like, I do think it is a problem for those who have a problem with gambling, but just like alcohol is a problem and you have beer commercials and things like that. So I do think there is a certain scenario where we are adults and you have to just, you know, stay away from things that get you in trouble. At the same time, the constant beating over the head, the constant proliferation of it, the ease of access to it in terms of making it a thing. I mean, I go to a Nuggets game in Colorado and the line for the betting odds is longer sometimes than the line to get in sometimes. And I'm just saying, to start, it was crazy. Yeah, it happened twice now. I've been to Denver games. I'm going to a third one next week, actually, against the Timberwolves. Awesome. So, yeah. So, like, I'm excited about that one. Yeah, exactly. So I'm pumped about that. But, like, what I mean is I just think it's a lot. So it's only a matter of time that something's going to happen. Like, you have, I mean, players actively doing it. And for me, that's the biggest thing, especially where I think, I'm not a whole conspiracy nut. That's not really my jam. But, like, I do think you see more and more, obviously, of the whole betting, gambling situation all over, which just feels kind of icky to me, when you also have more and more egregious calls from the referees and more crazy kind of endings and things like that and questionable calls by the refs, several this year, several the year before. Like, I'm not saying the two are obviously related, but also I can't just blindly say they're not related. Like, yes, refereeing's gotten worse, and some of it's so bad, though. Like, I'm just like, example, the Philadelphia 76ers game against the Los Angeles Clippers a couple nights ago, where Kelly Oubre got fouled going to the basket, no call, like twice. And then it happened before that again, and no call. That's what led to the jump ball to begin with. Like, some of these calls, I'm a Lakers fan, so I can bring up the game they had against the Celtics last year. I can bring up the game they had against the Timberwolves this year. Like, several different calls that come to mind immediately where it's like, can you not see? Like, this is not just a missed call. This is a very bad missed call with important consequences. And also, but the parlays or this or that. And that's another third angle for it that really bothers me, is that you do have a scenario where you have players and coaches, you know, guys yelling from the stand, well, go for 25, hit my parlay, this and that. Like, dude, like, I think it just kind of takes away, in my mind, the sanctity of the game. It kind of feels a little sullied from stuff like that, and it really kind of annoys me. So on the one hand, I definitely get you. I'm glad to have you on as somebody who, you know, does a little bit of that and isn't that. And I have friends, you know, Chris Walter, others who do. It's not like they're the bane of sports, but I do think that is a point where the NBA is getting maybe too cozy with it. I'm not a fan of that.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And the point you make about the officiating and with social media, people having more camera angles during the game, everything like that, any inconsistency or issues with officiating or ethics, anything like that, just opening yourself up to gambling is going to have people asking questions. And maybe people go overboard with that. As you mentioned, you're not a conspiracy theorist. I'm not either. Eventually there will be an issue. I don't want to predict when or what or all that stuff. But again, it's something that probably in the grand scheme is good for the league. As I've said before, nobody's turning down the money. Ownership's not turning down money. Teams aren't turning down money. The players aren't turning down money. And unfortunately, we've seen people like JB Bickerstaff has said he's received harassment over some fans placing bets, excuse me.
Yep.
I think Tyrese Halliburton might have said he was seeing a maybe sports psychologist. I can't remember correctly. Mm-hmm. And players are going to have to deal with more and more and more of that. Even, you know, stupid bickering at games where fans shout stuff like, oh, I had your under, or, oh, why'd you score 22 funny. Points instead of 24 points? Stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It kind of gives it like a murky tone to it, just an icky feeling. And, you know, I try not to be one of these people that says, like, you know, this is bad, this is bad, this is bad. I understand that ultimately it is an adult's choice on what they do, regardless of how I feel about kind of the advertisements and how it's taken over the podcast game. Something I am sympathetic to is I do think a lot of that stuff props up, you know, podcasts because it's such a niche market. It's not necessarily a big field in comparison to, I don't have an example off the top of my head, but just seeing a lot of podcasts that I listen to that I enjoy that I have no issue with. There is often a segment with Prize Picks or Underdog Fantasy, stuff like that. And I think that to this point, things have been pretty smooth with the leagues and states legalizing gambling and then kind of the pairing of the two. But I think over the past, I'll say 12 to 18 months, I think things have started to accelerate and we're beginning to see kind of cracks in some of the, I don't want to say morality because it's not a morality issue. I think it's just a preference issue, I would say, for the most part.
No, I think you're right. And it goes back, like you said, the different strokes for different folks, but it does have moments where it gets kind of icky. And so I definitely appreciate the nuance you provide on that answer. I think ultimately it is one of those things where we got to wait and see about Jontay Porter. If it does come out that there's something there, he's probably done in the NBA. Definitely the NBA is probably going to go down hard and make a statement. We don't stand for this, you know, which is slightly hypocritical in my opinion, but whatever. But like he's going to, heads will roll, specifically his head will roll for this. So that will be an unfortunate thing. Hopefully that's if they find like clear proof. So we'll see what that looks like. I mean, even the way they found it, apparently there was large amounts, $10,000 and $20,000 increments that were wagered on the under for him in many categories. And since many sports books apparently don't accept wagers over 2,000, that was kind of viewed as obscure trends. So that's how they kind of quote unquote narrowed it down to him. So we'll see. I mean, it's his first season in the NBA, like, for goodness sakes. I don't know. I hope not. If it is, it's sad. I also kind of get it, but I don't, but I do, you know, so we'll kind of see what comes out of that. But ultimately an unfortunate situation. And yeah, something, this might be a seminal moment in the beginning of the end in terms of the relationship with that, what that looks like. At least, at the very least, without being overly dramatic, it does symbolize the beginning of maybe some kind of change. However that looks, we will kind of find out. But that's what it looks like to me. All right, so I want to get to the race for the sixth seed with Jackson, but your boy forgot. I have to share the sponsor of the show. Don't know how I lose that. I want to encourage everyone to please check out Magic Mind. Listen, y'all, if y'all are like me or like Jackson, we have a lot that we like to do, a lot with basketball, but also have lives, families, things like that, a lot going on. What I can share that I found that's been really helpful for me over the last couple months is using the product Magic Mind, which has really helped me in terms of finding energy, but also not giving me the crazy kind of sporadic energy I usually get where I drink coffee or something like that. And I'm more sensitive to coffee. So by all means, if you're a coffee person, do you. No shame in the game. This also isn't a replacement for coffee, so there's really no competition here. But what I will say for myself is that coffee gets me all over the place. And it's one of those things that I get really, really excited, hyper. And for like maybe an hour or so, I'm super, super focused. And then I dip and I crash and then I'm kind of lazy. And so what I like about Magic Mind, not a coffee replacement, is more of an addition to your morning routine, right? It does something that I thought found interesting called time-released caffeine, where caffeine apparently, scientifically speaking, doesn't actually give you energy. It just blocks the receptors in your brain that tell you that you're tired. Did not know that. That was really neat. So when the receptors unblock 1 to 3 hours later, you get that drop in energy called the caffeine crash. That's the science here on a basketball show. Who would have thunk it, right? Magic Mind doesn't actually do that. Their formula has 12 active ingredients that support your body's energy engine, which ATP, you can look that up. a lot more big scientific words I'm not going to go into here, that will basically continue to enhance your energy. And I think that's interesting, helpful. It's all natural ingredients. And what they have that I really enjoy is that you can kind of find them anywhere. It's not just, oh, only through this website are you going to find XYZ. They have them at Sprouts. So if you go to Sprouts Market, you'll find it there. I guess this is an East Coast thing, but Central Market, if you know what that store is, they have them there. They have them on Amazon. That's actually, I got my sample to start with. And it's been helpful for me. So once y'all check that out, see if it works for you. If it does, great. If it doesn't, let me know about it. Let me know about it either way. Just my ego would be great. But either way, check that out. It's a limited offer you can use right now that will get you 48% off your first subscription or 20% off your one-time purchase. If you want to just hit it one time and get out, you get 20% off right now with the code DAILYNBA20 at checkout. So one more time, 48% off your first subscription. If you want to just sign up for a long time, you take me at my word, which thank y'all so much. If not, want to do the one trial, be okay with, that's fine. Get 20% off. All you got to do is put the code DAILYNBA20 in at checkout. So check that out, www.magicmind.com/DAILYNBA. All right, speaking of Daily NBA, let's get back to the NBA with Jackson. And we are about to talk about the race for the 16. Right now, Jackson, things have been tight in the NBA in terms of standings. I love it. I think the play-in tournament, which I wasn't a big fan of when it first came out, not going to lie, I just wasn't really feeling it. But I am also a person resistant to change. I think for me, it was something where I'm like, oh, it's like a ploy. It's a gimmick. Like, go through the 1-8, have the AFC locked in, keep that bad boy going. I don't see why you have to give 9 and 10 and 11 seeds, like, chances to get in the playoffs. Like, it's not a consolation prize here. Like, you either make it or you don't. 8 spots is already enough. That was my thought going in. I'm not going to lie, I still kind of think that, but at the same time, it's definitely made for juicy, more sustained end-of-season play, where I'm not just checking out like I normally would, you know, from 2020 on, or 2019 on, rather. No, 2019, from 2019 to before, where I'd basically go, okay, it doesn't matter, it's over, whatever, right? That's not something that happens here with the play-in tournament, so I do like that. It makes for juicier matchups, and if we look at the sixth seed, which is basically the only safe seed, for those who have been under a rock or didn't remember, play-in tournament, 7th and 8th play each other, 9th and 10th play each other. 9th and 10th play, the winner plays the winner of 7th and 8th, while the loser is out of the playoffs. And then the 7 and 8 play, the 7th seed, or the winner of that one kind of slots in as the 7th, and then the 8th plays the 9th, or the winner of the 9 and 10 for the honor of being the 8th seed. That is the bare bones breakdown if you didn't know. But y'all listen to the show, y'all do know, so there you go. But going back to where we are right now, standings-wise, race for the 6th seed, which is currently held by the Dallas Mavericks at 44-29. Right behind them in 7th place is the Phoenix Suns at 43-31. Right behind them is the Kings at 42-31. The Lakers at 9 at 41-33. And the Warriors at 10 at 39-44, with the Rockets, winners of 11 straight, out on their heels at 38-35. Jackson, what do you take stock of these 5 teams here? Oh, 5-6 teams, I guess 5 really, from the Mavericks to the Rockets. Where do you feel? Oh no, I was right, 6. My fault. What do you feel about these teams? Kind of what they
thought? Man, you brought up the Rockets' win streak, and I just initially thought to myself, I wonder what the longest win streak by a team in season for a team that might not make the playoffs, because that's incredible. But you alluded to kind of the origins of the play-in tournament, and I remember, or actually I was trying to think what my initial response to it was. I think that when it was brought about in the bubble, I was like, okay, this makes sense when they, you know, only brought, I think it was 22 teams, not the same amount of games, obviously pandemic, weird schedule, etc. I was like, okay, makes sense to try, let's do it. And then the next season I was like, that was pretty cool, let's go with it. And honestly, it's been one of my favorite features about the NBA the past however many seasons. I will say this year, the Eastern Conference is kind of an example of why maybe instituting a cutoff of some sort is a good idea, because personally, now the Brooklyn Nets have fallen off. But up until that point, you have teams like the Pacers, Heat, 76ers, who frankly were playing much, much better than the Hawks and Bulls. But that's an entirely different subject. As for the Western Conference, this is really interesting, because for months and months and months, a discussion point in basketball podcasting was the Lakers and Warriors are locked into the 9-10 game. Suddenly, Lakers are healthier. They've added Spencer Dinwiddie. Rui Hachimura is playing more. Gabe Vincent is trending in the right direction. I even believe Jared Vanderbilt is trending in the right direction. They're probably going to stay in that 8-9 range. Maybe they get up to 7. They're 2 back at 7. I'm not proxied all the tiebreaker information. I'm still high on the Los Angeles Lakers. I think that they're a team that will get a bump in the playoffs just from not having to play any back-to-backs. Veteran teams tend to do better with days off and preparation time. As for the Warriors, I'm not a Warriors believer. I think they're a good team. I think they're, you know, if you put out their win total, the 82 games with relative health, they're a 45, 46 win team, something like that.
Okay.
Nothing spectacular. The Houston Rockets, I thought they were dead. Suddenly they're revived. They lost their best player in Alperen Sengun, and they're playing completely different, more 5-by-5 switching. They play Amin Thompson at the, I guess, power forward now. Fred VanVleet is healthy, and I think that VanVleet is a really kind of not an indicator for the team, but he's really essential for them just with pull-up shooting, pick and roll. He can play the pocket pass game, stuff like that.
Like a barometer.
So I don't want to discount the run they're on, how well they're playing. It seems like the mathematical odds are against them, but that April 4th, I believe, game against the Warriors looms large. Unfortunately for the Kings, I know that Trey Lyles is trending towards a return later this week or next week, if I saw correctly, but I think the Malik Monk injury is a huge blow to them. I know that a lot of the discussion goes to Sabonis and De'Aaron Fox and even Keegan Murray, but I think that there are times where he's their third most important player. He closes a lot of games. Tremendous chemistry with Sabonis and dribble handoff game, pick and roll. Generates a lot of late game offense for them. And for a team that runs as many dribble handoffs as they do, that plays as fast as they do with the starting lineups in, that has, you know, me, big Davion Mitchell fan, not exactly clicking in the NBA. They're very reliant on, you know, kind of their top guards. And then Keon Ellis is obviously factored in, making a difference for them defensively. So, in short, I am not very high on the Sacramento Kings and the Golden State Warriors at this point in time. Houston Rockets are a great story, but again, unfortunately, I'm always going to bet against youth. I'd rather pick more veteran teams, basically. But the Suns, Mavericks, Pelicans kind of trio has been a big discussion in the NBA, especially with how well the Pelicans have played. For discussion's sake, I'm not going to consider them into the play-in mix. Even though they're only two games up on Phoenix, I think they're pretty secure with only 8-9 games left, whatever it is for these teams. With the Dallas Mavericks and the Phoenix Suns, I honestly think it's more likely the Mavericks get 5 than drop to 7. So I think that the Suns are pretty securely in the play-in bracket. I've been a vocal supporter of them this season. I've always said they play well with the 3 stars healthy. While I wouldn't have done the Nurkic trade, he's big for their dribble handoff game. He gives them size. He's a good rebounder. Now, I think that, especially as his ankle's not healthy, we see some of the mobility issues. He's never been a great finisher, stuff like that, et cetera. But to be frank, the Phoenix Suns have been very disappointing to me. For a team with 3 players that I think of as highly as I do of Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, and Bradley Beal, there's some kind of, you know, late-game offense turnover issues. And I think that I don't want to say that's a correctable issue, but that's something I don't want a veteran team, especially a team surrounded by shooting and a big man that has a capable skill set. If he catches, he can make decisions and play with some snap. So I don't know. The thing with the Western Conference is it's all about matchups. I always say that 2 or 3 of these teams that get eliminated in the first round are going to be absolutely devastated, because I don't want to lock in my picks until there's, you know, the matchups are sorted out. But I could easily see a 3 seed losing, or a 4 seed losing in 6 games to the 5 seed, or a 7 seed pushing the 2 seed to 7 games, stuff like that. And I think that with the way the NBA is now, with how injuries are managed, with how the scheduling is done, where you see some really weird schedule quirks with certain back-to-backs, and then teams that play a lot of national TV games have backloaded schedules, stuff like that. I think that it leads to really weird results. And I don't want to say variance mm-hmm. in teams finishing, but I think that, I don't know. Sometimes I just think that the season is getting less and less predictive over time, whereas I feel like 5 to 7 years ago, we could take the top 2 to 4 teams and basically slot them into however far they were supposed to make it in the postseason. Maybe that's the Cavaliers-Warriors stuff skewing my judgment, but I just feel like for that period of time, it was Cavaliers, Warriors, Rockets, Thunder, Spurs, etc., and we all knew what teams it was going to be when it got down to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I think you're right. The days of that kind of are more by the wayside than before, right? And even like you said, like it's different in terms of matchups. Styles make fights. All of that is very valid and very real. And so, like, I'm also with you. I'm not really high on the Kings right now. Not only have they been swooning just in general, but you just lost Malik Monk basically effectively for the remainder of the season, unless the Kings were to probably make it to the Western Conference Finals, right? 4 to 6 weeks with an MCL sprain. No fun. Kevin Herter, torn labrum, out for the season, right? So those are shooting guards right there, right? One was sixth man of the year candidate. The other, you know, he was in and out the doghouse, but he was your starting shooting guard, right? Keon Ellis has stepped up great, but you've had Trey Lyles out and other guys out here and there due to injury. And so you don't have a fully healthy Kings team. And when they were fully healthy, they were a good but not great team. So that's the issue, right? With the Suns, I mean, they're safe. I'm not high on them. I just feel like their big three, when they played together, has been good. When they haven't been battling injuries or out due to injuries. And when they have all played together, they've been good, but not like world destroying great. Like if you're going to compare them to like another big three that didn't have a lot of time, they're nowhere near the Kevin Durant, James Harden, Kyrie Irving, Brooklyn Nets. Like when they were together, they took care of business. With the Suns, when they're all together, they have a really good chance to win. With the Nets, when they're all together, it didn't seem fair. You know what I mean? Like it was just a weird way, the difference in the big three. Some of that is themselves. Like you had a lot more balance between Kyrie, KD, and James Harden than you do between Bradley Beal, Devin Booker, and Kevin Durant. You had a clear point guard, you had a clear shooting guard, you had a off ball wing, right? It was funny. Harden played point guard, Kyrie was more shooting guard, and then of course, you know, KD played the three, and now KD's the four. Booker's the one and Brad's the two, but they sometimes switch, and it really depends on the role players they're playing alongside them and if they're healthy and who they are. It's a lot of variables with Phoenix, and it's been that way all season. So I can't say that they're with the actual certainty for a fact for me. Like they continue to fall, right? That's just my thoughts on that. Whether or not they do, again, that's the interesting thing, but they could fall. With that being said, if they make the playoffs, they're fine. I do see them not going super far, but they're a good team, right? The Lakers, love the Lakers. I'm a Laker fan. Like, here we are. I've owned that. But at the same time, like, they've won a good bit of their games. They're 7-3 in their last 10, and they're still in ninth, right? Now the Lakers are a team that could beat a team in any given night, with the exception of apparently the Nuggets or, before the injuries, the Kings. And we know that they could lose on any given night. They lost a very sluggish game to the Indiana Pacers that they could have won. So it really depends for them. But I got to say, with the Kings being as they are, I no longer have any concerns for them as a Lakers guy. Then Lakers can take care of anyone above them in any 7-game matchup. And when I say take care of, I don't say it'll be easy, but I think they can win any 7-game matchup with any of the teams above them, with the exception of the Denver Nuggets, who have just had their number. And also, like when LeBron says they have our number, yeah, they just got you. You know, there's all the wrong matches for them. But they've beaten the Timberwolves before. They have tough game against them. They've beaten the Thunder several times. Like, they played the Clippers and beaten them twice. They've beaten the Pelicans. They've beaten the Mavs. You know, they've beaten the Suns twice this season. Almost 3 times, if I remember. Like, every other team, the Warriors, they have the Warriors number over, or more or less, the last couple seasons. So I feel really solid about them. The Warriors, I don't know. Team Draymond going crazy, Steph kind of being in slumps, Klay Thompson with his uneven season. There's been a lot of noise in Golden State, very few of it good. And they're a team that can do well or shoot themselves in the foot, thanks to an ill-timed Draymond play more than likely. But, like, they're a team that just kind of goes in and out for me. And then lastly, the Rockets, they're solid. I like them. I'm glad they're winning these games. They've had a pretty easier schedule, if you really think about it, compared to some of the other teams. But they've really done well. Credit to Jalen Green for putting on an absolute heater. Easily player of the month for March, in my opinion, for the West. You've had the defense step up. Like you said, Fred VanVleet's a real barometer for this team, and they've done a really good job since they've moved to Jabari Smith Jr. full-time at the five in the absence of Alperen Sengun. But we'll see what that looks like as they narrow it down. And also, it's a numbers game. And have the Rockets run out of time? Only time will tell. They have a big matchup with the Warriors on April 4th. I'm sure we'll all be watching that pretty intently. But, yeah, that's going to be fun. I definitely am torn on it. But real quick, Jackson, let me get your who's your seventh and eighth, your prediction. As it stands right now, this isn't hold you to the wall.
Okay, so I have not looked at all the tiebreaker stuff, but I'll just predict 4 through 10 just because they're so close, and I'll challenge myself. So I'll say that it'll be Clippers 4, Mavericks 5, Pelicans 6, Suns 7, Lakers 8, Kings 9. Warriors 10, unfortunately.
That's okay. And where are the Lakers?
What was your prediction, Corbin, at least for 6 through 10 or whatever?
Yeah, so I'm going to say the Mavericks hold out at 6, Suns at 7, Lakers at 8. We're going to do this is tough, but I'm going to do the Kings at 9. So I'm gonna say ultimately my final three teams, the teams that are gonna like ultimately make it out, at least right now, as they go into the playoffs. There we go. As they go into the play-in tournament, I'm gonna have Mavericks holding firm at 6. I don't know if they sneak past the Pelicans, but they could. But Mavericks holding firm at 6, Suns 7, Lakers 8, and I'll probably have the Kings at 9, and I'll keep the Warriors in 10th. I think there's just too much of a gap for the Warriors to make up there.
It would be an awesome story if, after years of the Warriors drilling the Rockets, if the younger renditions of the rebuilded Houston Rockets could beat out the sunken and older version of the Warriors. Not that it makes up for all the titles the Warriors won and the playoff eliminations they sent the Rockets, but that would just be poetic in a way. But you got me looking at the Sacramento Kings schedule, because on one hand, I agree with you. They've just been good this whole year. I think that they're kind of a team where people are either, you know, how can you not love how they play with the pace and all the dribble handoffs? And Sabonis is just a total machine with how well he rebounds. And he's one of the more unique kind of dribble handoff screening, dribble pitch guys in the league. But then there's a section of people who just, I don't want to say despise the team, but have no belief in them. And I'm kind of in the middle. Like, they're a solid team. They're a good team. My worry with them is they've now had 3 or 4 rotational injuries, and they're going to be leaning a lot on Sabonis, leaning a lot on De'Aaron Fox, and then even guys like Harrison Barnes, who were starting this season for them, but kind of more tame, lowered roles from previous seasons. Now you're going to be asking more and more of those guys. And if you just go player for player, this is not a great way to do things, but just kind of project out their rotation, compare it to the other teams. And I don't want to say, you know, look at trends necessarily, but it's really hard to kind of find yourself as a team when you stumble a bit, the back-to-back losses to the Mavericks, and then regain your footing while you're battling injuries. Like, they got the Utah Jazz on deck, but then it's Clippers, at Knicks, at Celtics, at Nets, which in theory is an easy game. But again, a good road team goes 500 on the road. At Thunder, versus Pelicans, versus Suns, and then they get a free win against the Blazers. So I had difficulty parsing 8 and 9 with the Kings and the Lakers. Lakers are 2 back in the loss column, 1 back in the win column. And I just – lately, the Lakers, I think that they've gotten back to playing Hachimura a ton. Obviously, Russell and Reeves are playing tremendous basketball. I think Dinwiddie's defending well for them when he factors into their guard rotation. They're doing lots of good screen-to-screener stuff. I think that – I would say over the past 6 weeks or so, we're seeing more of a synergistic play with their starters, because I've always looked at their team and said, you know, they have 5, 6, 7 starting caliber players, but a lot of their key lineups, we weren't seeing the, you know, kind of the, just the performance of like that would match the talent on the roster. And people always say this with old, you know, star teams that they're going to be so good and they're going to, you know, fit together and it doesn't quite work out. But I just think that, again, you're getting with the screen to screener stuff, you're capitalizing on having guys like Austin Reeves who can set the rip screen, then hit movement threes. You have Davis who can roll to the rim. You can use LeBron James in a variety of these actions kind of as the screener, the initiator, or the dive player even. And
versatility.
I've turned this into a long-winded rant, but
oh, it's fine.
In short, I love how the Lakers are, or I like how the Lakers are playing. I think that they'll benefit from rest days in the playoffs. Everybody knows the type of player LeBron James is. I would even say you got guys like D'Angelo Russell, Anthony Davis. I think that their basketball IQs are shortchanged. I think that some of the discourse with Davis is that he's soft, which I never got that perception, especially the past 2 years. He's played almost every game. And if you look at him stylistically, he's such a relentless player on the offensive glass. He rolls hard all the time. I shouldn't say all the time. Sometimes he kind of sits down and pick and pop. But and then defensively, you can ask him to hedge. You can ask him to drop. You can ask him to switch. I would say that in terms of kind of sheer tax on the body, he's up there with anyone in the league. And I don't know, D'Angelo Russell, I remember a few years ago, a lot of people thought that he was Brandon Roy or James Harden. And I was like, I don't know. He's, you know, not quite that type of athlete, even though those guys aren't regarded as athletes necessarily. They had kind of that quick twitch with their handle and whatnot. But Russell has kind of become a player that, in my opinion, became cool to hate. I think that people looked at the flaws too much. But with him, you have such good off-the-dribble shot-making, tremendous passer to cutters. And I think that every team that Russell is on, I think that something that stands out with him is he knows the game so well. He's not a good defensive player, but I very rarely kind of view him as a massive, massive, massive detriment, at least throughout the course of the season for a team defensively. Just watching him a ton with the Timberwolves over the past couple seasons, a big issue with on Timberwolves Twitter was his play or his turnovers, and I never quite agreed with that sentiment.
No, I think you're right. I think I some of it, I mean, I'm not gonna lie, with AD, I thought he was definitely injury prone, right? And so like
I didn't want to say that he hadn't been injured before, but I just feel like every time there's a national game with the Lakers, it's always like AD better go out and get 35 and 18. But I'm like, I think he's playing really good. He's always been a top 8 to 12 player or whatever. So let me put it this way. He's always been the top 8 to 12, some seasons even better, player. But I feel like if you asked where he ranked league standing 3 years ago, everyone would say top 5. But now people would say, oh, I don't know, top 20. But to me, he's very close, or even the exact, not the exact same player, but just as good as he was. He's healthier than he's been in years. And people have used the health of LeBron and Davis as a knock against the Lakers, and maybe that's not a good sign necessarily for their play overall throughout the season, but I'm dang sure that it's a good sign that they're going into the playoffs healthy, because last season LeBron played good down the stretch.
Yeah,
this season I think he's going to play great down the stretch, because that's just a terrible foot injury that he had last year. And I don't know. It'll be interesting, because I root for the Timberwolves. I like watching the Clippers. And I was thinking to myself, that would kind of suck to play the Lakers round one without Towns, or partially without Towns. We'll see. Then I was like, you know, because I watch the Clippers a lot. I like James Harden, like PJ Tucker. I was like, I do not want the hallway series with the Lakers. Every game would be a road game. And I'm getting ahead of myself with all these kind of fake matchups and thinking ahead, but I don't want to overestimate the Lakers, because everyone always gets upset when you talk about the Lakers, like, oh, this is a basketball podcast, we're not going to talk about the Lakers, but I actually think that we should talk about them because, not because of the Lakers, but just because this is kind of the post-deadline team from last year. I think that they had their run, and I think that they're not shaping up to make the same run, but I think that they're in a good spot, and I think that people just kind of put them in that 9-10 hole for the past 2 months and kind of gave them the kiss of death. But I don't know. The thing is with the playoffs, and it's all about matchups and it's all about health, because the Kings have had a good season. They've had injuries at the wrong time. The Timberwolves have had a great season, and they had the Towns injury at the wrong time. Now, luckily, they've fended off any dropping in the standings. I still am fearful of a playoff matchup going the wrong way. Mm-hmm. I think that stuff like injuries or matchup issues, stuff like that, it's way more exploitable in a playoff series than it is over, you know, 15 games in a month or whatever.
Oh, yeah. For sure, for sure. And I think you're right. It's something where it's about timing. I mentioned this on another podcast before. Timing is an important factor in this too, because you're right. Are teams running into form? Are you getting a mix of more of the walking wounded? Like, what exactly are you working with as a team going into the play in the postseason? Things of that sort. So, no, I definitely think that's really good insight, and thank you for giving me that for sure. I guess as we kind of wind down here, I do want to ask just some rapid fire rock it or drop it as you go. And you've already gave one, so I'm literally just going to throw out – actually, I'll throw it out just to get official thing on you. Whether you are high on this team or not, you can give a few reasons why, but here we are. So first one, Phoenix Suns, rock it or drop it?
They'll make it out the play-in and lose in the first round.
All right. I like it. I get you. Let's go switch it up a little bit and go switch it up a little bit, excuse me, and go to the East, the Cleveland Cavaliers. They've been all over this season. Jackson, how do you feel about them?
The Cavaliers, they're a weird team because I think that they've had so many health issues, but a lot of the guys they've had step in to play more minutes have played so well, like Dean Wade, Sam Merrill. Obviously everyone talks about the fit of the guards and the fit of the bigs, but I think they're a good team. I don't want to put myself into a hole with any potential first round matchups because it's possible they face the Embiid Sixers. It's possible they face the Miami Heat, and everyone knows how that goes. Whenever you doubt the Heat, they somehow make it back in the Eastern Conference Finals and NBA Finals, but I'll take the coward's way out. I'm not going to predict the Cavaliers' postseason success. I will say that I think they're good. I just think that them, the Knicks, and the 76ers are kind of the three Eastern Conference teams that are proven, but have some very questionable kind of health things. I know that Mitchell had the knee thing, and then he had the nose thing, and he's kind of getting back in the swing of things, but to answer your question, I'll say rock. I think that they're in a fairly good spot for the first round.
I'm with it. I like it. I like it. I think, I gave you a tough one there. And that team, they've been interesting all year. So I don't fault you at all for having to think about that for a second. The last one is my own team, the Los Angeles Lakers. What are your final thoughts on them, guys?
I think... yeah, I'll go with it. I think the Lakers will make it out of the play-in, and I think the Nuggets would probably handle them again, to be honest.
Okay.
And I think, I don't know, because it's tough because if the Timberwolves had Towns healthy, I think the Timberwolves would beat them. But I think that, you know, I don't want to use the last game because Minnesota was dealing with some loss of bodies there, but so that doesn't factor in to me, but I think with the Lakers, they're one of the few teams who can match Minnesota's kind of size, and they're not just a big team. They have length that can stick with the ball, stay attached. Obviously, McDaniels, Kyle Anderson, they all get into the ball very well. Yeah. Size behind that with the bigs. Lakers are one of the few teams that can credibly match up with that. I'll say the Lakers make it out of the play-in, and I'll say they lose a competitive first-round series, although I think Denver would beat them in five games. I think that they could beat the Timberwolves or Thunder, though, but I wouldn't pick it right now.
That's fair. That's fair. I it hurts my heart to hear that, but I also see the truth.
If we got more confirmation on Towns' injury, like he's going to be out for the first round, I might be open to switching my pick on that, because I know it's kind of taboo with how they're 10-3 without Towns. I do think that teams will be able to exploit certain things with Jaden McDaniels' shot profile, Kyle Anderson's offensive tendencies, even Rudy. I think that he punishes switches on the offensive glass. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think he does it on the rim rolls and stuff. So we'll see. I got to give it more thought, but I'll say make it out the play-in competitive first round series.
No, I like that though. I think it's good. I hope that they get to the second round. Maybe Lightning can strike twice. They get a favorable matchup and you find them in the Western Conference Finals again. I think if the Nuggets get there ultimately though, they will not get past them. So I'm definitely with you on that. All right. Only have two more questions left for you, Jackson. Who is your X factor personally, whether it's a team or a player, over the final 2 weeks of the season?
X factor over the final 2 weeks of the season.
Yep.
I will say, oh man, I was thinking about this earlier and it was so tricky. I mean, the obvious one is Joel Embiid, because if he's 90% of what he was, Philadelphia has a chance as long as they don't play Boston, in my opinion.
True.
On the other hand, I feel like that one's a little too easy, because obviously adding a top 3 to 5 player back makes a huge difference. Four X factors down the stretch, I will throw That is tough. I'll say Jonathan Kuminga, because I think that people have kind of, I don't know, it's going to be interesting. For the Warriors, they are a team that has had stretches of very good play. I think that they're kind of mismatched bench units have actually had some success. I think that Chris Paul playing with Trayce Jackson-Davis more instead of Kevon Looney has kind of not unlocked him, but been a benefit to him. Klay Thompson, ultimately, I think he's still had a pretty solid season. I think that people compare what he was as a player to what he is now, and it's very jarring that an older player regresses and struggling and whatnot.
It just happens.
But yeah. I still think he's a good player. The thing with the Warriors is, in theory, they're a team that fits together so well, where you would have Draymond Green at the 5, you know, Andrew Wiggins and Jonathan Kuminga at the 3 and 4, and then whomever they start the 2, is it going to be Pods, is it going to be Clay, et cetera? I don't think that they're going to do the dual point guards if they could prevent it, but I think that they're kind of just at not a crossroads, so to speak, but I think that they have young players who, in a different circumstance, could have more kind of a more tilted developmental context where they're not racing against the clock with the play in, and you could kind of get more organic growth that way. I think that Kuminga emerged this season. I think that he emerged despite of his circumstance. People viewed him as kind of a slow burn developmentally, but I think that this is something that was multiple years in the making. I am biased because I was a big fan of him coming into the NBA, but the reason he's an X factor for me is because just given the age of the veteran players, how Kevon Looney's playing less, how Draymond Green for some reason has become a total wild card when he deems the game is below him.
Mm-hmm.
I could see Jonathan Kuminga playing 40 minutes in a playoff game. And I could see Jonathan Kuminga having a shaky play-in game. I really don't know. And I think that I would bet on Kuminga playing well. But just for Golden State to have any kind of semblance of a run, it's going to be guys like Kuminga, Andrew Wiggins rounding into form, who I do think has sneakily played better over recent weeks, months, whatever. But there's just always been not something missing from Kuminga, but just as Golden State team, you always feel like they're on the cusp of going 14-6 over a 20-game stretch. And then you see and they look and they lost to who, or, you know, they have so many mind-numbing garbage time turnovers. Mm-hmm. When teams that I root for, so for example, the Timberwolves, they've played some competitive games against the Warriors this season. I love when the game gets into crunch time against them because they're not making good decisions. They run a lot of split action. They play with pace. Obviously, if they play ball screen, Steph's going to get trapped or hedged a lot. Sometimes there's some shaky kind of, I don't want to say decision-making, but execution out of that with some sloppiness. And I just think that they're a team that's going to give you a chance to beat them. And as you're aging, as you're getting older and older and the physical skills diminish, you tend to see players get better at that. And they have shared experience. They're obviously, they've won multiple championships together, tons of Hall of Famers. But I think that they're a team that with their distinct style, with the volume of passing and player movement they have, there just has not quite been the necessary level of execution, even from some of their more veteran players.
Yeah. Do you think it's a lack of urgency? Do you think it's just a lack of continuity? What do you attribute that to?
I don't want to say lack of urgency. Like I said, I think Draymond Green,
because they're a great veteran player,
right? I would say that he's underrated. I also think that he scoffs at a play-in race. And like I saw the other day, he made some comments about Terry Eason, who's dealing with injury right now. Mm-hmm. And he's, you know, made comments like, we're not worried about the Rockets. And you never read into that with a player because you just want to focus on yourself, on your own team. But it's almost, I get the sense that he's viewed kind of this season and some of the low points of the Warriors this year as an insult, that it's like beneath him. And I don't think that mindset seeps into the team, but I also look at them and they always played such a frantic, chaotic, breakneck style, game warping, just with their split actions, their cutting. All of their star players were so unselfish. And then, oh, they had a top, you know, 10 player of all time in Stephen Curry. Then they added another top 10 to 15 player all time in Kevin Durant. And Andre Iguodala, he's an all-star, but he's coming off the bench. He's accepting that role. They have guys like Andrew Bogut, Harrison Barnes. They've always had talented players who had talented players. They've always played a distinct style. But I think some of the slippage physically is starting to showcase itself more as decision-making stuff because they don't have the talent. They don't have the shot-making to overcome it in the same degree. Someone like you mentioned earlier, I think you said it while we were recording, that Stephen Curry has had slumps at times this season. And I don't necessarily view it as slumps, but if you just look at it numerically, analytically, whatever you want to call it, he's been around 40, 41, 42% from the field over the past few weeks. And I don't look at that and I don't think, oh, Steph is playing bad. I think that, oh, the way this roster is built with a lot of defensive-oriented, kind of playmaking-oriented guys who can screen, get in the soft spot, catch and make decisions, screen off ball, slip it, kind of know how to maneuver that way, more cerebral players. I think that some of those aspects paired with their decision-making aspects to where they have one part of the roster who's physically diminishing and they have another part of the roster who has never been that physically. Mm-hmm. And they just play small, they play unathletic oftentimes, and then they don't have the same shot making. So that's why I've always kind of viewed Jonathan Kuminga as a variable because he's one of the game-breaking players for them. Even Wiggins, who I still think is a good athlete, he doesn't dunk the ball a lot. I think he still guards the ball really well, but I want to explain myself properly without kind of diminishing Wiggins' game, but they just don't have that athlete, especially with Gary Payton, too, dealing with so many injuries, being in and out of the lineup. He's not quite the player he was the title season.
No, he definitely is. And I think some of that, I mean, he's also, 31, 32, and injuries have helped. So age-related regression for a guy who relied primarily on his athleticism, maybe. You know, he's expected to be this, like, guard the best guards through wings, right? maybe even some forwards at times, right? And he has had a bunch of injuries, and he is in his early 30s, so maybe it's something like that that's an issue, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And he's also a pretty small size player for kind of the role and position he plays. He's basically point guard size, but in no way is he a point guard, really, in any definition of the word. And yeah, so that was my long explanation on the Warriors. I just think that there's kind of directional questions with them. There's availability questions. There's expected regression with players.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's players that were added to the roster, signed to the roster, traded for to fill roles with the expectation that certain players would be at this level playing in this lineup combination. And that's the thing. The thing about the Western Conference and the league as a whole is a big point we've made this podcast is we've talked about how so much of it is matchups, timing, health, etc.
Yep.
Stuff like Draymond Green getting ejected from 4 games this season, getting suspended. That stuff has probably cost the Warriors 2 wins. And maybe they're an equally strong caliber team as the Pelicans, Mavericks, Clippers, Suns, whatever. I wouldn't necessarily say that, but if you're an optimist in the team, you believe they're right there. Yep. But because of the factors that we've discussed, it doesn't matter because they've lost those games. You said the Rockets might run out of time. To that same point, the Warriors can't make up time. They're going to be in the 9-10 game.
Very true. Very true. You make an excellent point. Like, it is what it is for them. Like, it's as it was a Yogi Bear. I forgot who said it, but it's gotten late.
That's a great way to put it. It is what it is. Like,
it is what it is. Mm-hmm. It's gotten late early for them, for real. So I'm with you there. Honestly, Jackson, I got to say, this already has been more than I was even expecting in terms of a really good deep dive into the race for six and the bottom of the league, and not even the bottom of the league, the bottom of the playoff contending teams. Probably a better way to put that, right? For you, I guess this is just something for next week, immediate to focus on. You watch a lot of basketball. You put out a lot of basketball content. What is the one game that you are watching next week, absolutely certain, that you think people should check out?
Well, I'll give you two answers. The game I'm most excited for, to my surprise, or I shouldn't say to my surprise, but if you told me this 2 weeks ago, I would have said this game is not irrelevant because I don't like to say stuff like that, but April 4th, I think, is Rockets-Warriors. That's suddenly going to be must-see TV. I don't know if the game has been flexed onto any of the television networks, but I know that if it's not, it's going to be like an NBA Twitter watch-along. Mm-hmm. And I think Monday or Tuesday, the Suns and Pelicans play. That'll be a big game. More or less, if the Pelicans win, I think they're pretty strapped into the top six. So those are two games that I'm watching for. Rockets-Warriors for kind of fun, personal preference reasons, whereas the Pelicans and Suns game could have more kind of bearings on the Western Conference because with how Zion Williamson is looking, obviously Brandon Ingram is TBD but seemingly avoided serious injury. Mm-hmm. Their center situation is a whole different topic, but just having Zion playing the way he is, Trey Murphy III coming back from knee surgery playing so well, Herbert Jones, he's going to get DPOI votes, and I don't think that that's unwarranted. I think he should be all the first team. Them being the six, being the five, being the four even versus them being seven is something that'll swing the Western Conference to some extent because they're not a good matchup for the Clippers or for the Minnesota Timberwolves, in my opinion. And they're a good team, so they're a hard matchup for everyone. But, it's an exciting week for sure. I do like that the play-in race has given us so many races within the traditional 1-8 playoff race. Because before I felt like it was teams are playing for eight or teams are playing for the one seed. Now teams are playing to get in the 4-5 game. Teams are trying to avoid the play-in. Teams are trying to avoid missing the play-in, which apparently now I think it feels like doubly embarrassing Like if you're the Brooklyn Nets and you look at this season and you're going to lose 48, 50, 52 games, whatever it is, it almost like compounds your failure to some extent.
Yeah, it definitely makes it look a whole lot worse. That is for sure. I agree with you on that. Wow, this has been a show. This has been an episode. I want to thank you, Jax, for coming on. Real quick, before I let you plug all of your work and everything, I got to share my entries for the games of the week coming up. I take yours as well, April 4th. Rockets and Warriors, that's going to be a game to watch for sure. Also, you did mention it, but I'm going to reiterate. Like you said, Suns and Pelicans, Monday, April 1st. April Fool's Day, a fun one. April 2nd has a couple of good ones. Mavericks and Warriors will clash. I think that'll be one to watch for sure. And the Clippers and Kings will do battle. And obviously the Kings have a real investment. And so do the Clippers, considering where they are in the standings. So that's going to be a really, really, really fun game to watch. But yeah, I think the game. And then also, lest we forget, the same night that the Warriors and Rockets play each other on Thursday, April 4th, so do the Nuggets and the Clippers. So, and that's what I love. These games are going to be down to the wire. And then, of course, what better than the Warriors on the second half of back-to-back on the 5th playing the Dallas Mavericks in Dallas. So it's going to be a gauntlet of really fun, really tight basketball games where playoff implications and play-in implications are rampant. And I'm here for it. I'm totally here for it. So let's get back. Let's sit back. Let's have a good one, that for sure. But Jackson, thank you for taking this time with me. I really appreciate you, you know, giving your insight, your contributions, and really kind of making the show a good one. I really appreciate having you on. Like I said, we'll have to have you on again. But real quick, between your writing, between this podcast appearance, all the things you do, can you share with the good folks where they can find you and your work?
So you can follow me on Twitter, Jackson Lloyd, at Jackson Lloyd MBA. I've been putting out a lot of content. I've been getting the Patreon page started. It's free. I post articles on, I cross post them on Patreon, Medium, and Twitter articles because I know everyone has kind of their preference on where to read stuff. I would say that most people probably prefer Medium if I had to guess. That's just the most user-friendly reading experience in my opinion, but I'm experimenting with all those. Again, follow me on Twitter. Patreon page is NBA Action with Jackson. Gonna start posting more video content, and I'm always just there live tweeting games, tweeting clips, talking about stuff, and yeah.
Always good to find Jackson's work. I promise you, he's a Twitter mainstay. You'll literally find him all over. That's most of where I find his work and stuff anyway. So, yeah, really appreciate you as always giving your time. And like I said, we'll have to make this happen again here before the season's over for certain. So definitely make sure to check out Jackson on Twitter at Jackson Lloyd NBA. Listen, y'all, if you want to find me, you can find me on Twitter at Corbin NBA, CorbanNBA. I'm not quite as prolific as Jackson, but I go out there. I watch the games. I'm around, you know, whether it's the NBA, not really into college too much, but I am into the NBA draft a lot, doing some grassroots basketball scouting this season. So I'll be doing that basically starting next weekend for sure, in addition to all this stuff. So, I mean, we're basketball sickos on this show. By the way, recording this at 10:52 my time, which is even later on Jackson's side. So, like, when I say basketball sickos, I'm not playing with you here. And it's probably likely that our nights are not over with something basketball-related after this. So, just saying, if you know, doubted the insight that we bring y'all here and the dedication, it's for real, for real. But, yeah, listen, y'all, check out, like, Jackson again, at Jackson Lloyd NBA. Check me out at Corbin NBA. This is Sports Ethos presentation. So check out Sports Ethos at sportsethos.com, on Twitter at Sports Ethos. Again, check out MagicMind/DailyNBA for that code to get that 40% off. And that's going to do it here for another episode of Round Ball Ramble. So as I like to say, for Jackson, for myself, we are Frosty. Y'all say Frosty, and we'll talk to y'all real, real soon. All right, y'all.